We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Hello and welcome to the RotoViz College Football Fantasy Podcast. I am your host, Stefan LeCoe, joined as always by my co-host, Matt Wispay. This podcast is being brought to you by Blue Wire. And of course, we are on the RotoViz main feed. We can also be found at College Football Fantasy Podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you so much for joining us today. Matthew, how the hell are you, buddy?
I'm good. We're rolling without a show doc today, so today's going to be a little bit more free flow. I'm trying out a new pair of headphones because this week I decided to destroy a pair of Beats because I'm that cool kid who's an idiot and tries to fix things at 3 a.m. Don't do this, kids. I'm okay. I mean, life's a little bit hectic right now, dealing with some real life day job stuff, but it is what it is. I mean, we are coming up on signing day, the fake signing, the late, I don't even know what to call it anymore.
I think it's the late signing day. Yeah.
The late signing day for college football players, and yet the number one player in college football or the number one high school player probably won't sign on this day. So it's going to be crazy. JT Tuamalau, he's probably not signing until April.
It keeps getting pushed back. Yeah, he's like the edge guy from up in Washington. Lot of links, which I didn't realize how many Washington and Northwest guys, your Ohio State Buckeyes have landed this year. But there's a real pipeline.
Including a kid that went to his high school. So he's an interesting player, and that's why I obviously care about recruiting. But I mean, with all that, we have the news that the NFL will not be hosting a traditional combine this year. We are finishing up Senior Bowl week, so
question mark.
I don't really know. I haven't been following it super closely. I know every year somebody gets like becomes the new hotness in Senior Bowl week. We'll talk about this year's new hotness. But yeah, I mean, I think there's still football. There's always football to talk about. My wife asked me, "Aren't you going to be done with the podcast for a little bit?" I was like, "Nah, there's always football." I mean, I'm good. I think we have a pretty good idea of stuff to talk about, even though we're kind of in a weird time, but I think we have a pretty good show for you guys today.
Yeah. I think so too. We're going to start with just some news. So much is going on in the coaching world that we're going to hold off on most of that for a little while because it's just forever changing. And we want to be able to like really break stuff down, in just one cohesive, long episode, I'm sure. But we will be talking about some players that decided to come back for either their senior year or maybe their fifth year. Some of these guys wanted to improve their draft capital next year. I assume that's the main reason why, other than maybe just want to, you know,
they like being old.
Yeah, that's right. And then we're going to spend the bulk of the show breaking down position by position. We're going to give you Matt's top five at each position, and I'm going to ask him some questions as to why his players over others, and I might throw in some of my ideas along the way. But that's our show. It's going to be fun. But before we really jump in, what's one of the biggest pieces of football news that you just can't stop thinking about since since the beginning of January?
So there's been a big, I know you said beginning of January. I care about something that happened yesterday. And that was, there was a transfer commitment announced yesterday by one of my favorite running backs in all of college football. And that's Eric Gray from Tennessee. Tennessee's been a bit of a dumpster fire, as everyone knows. Well, Eric Gray was kind of at the center of a lot of it, and he transferred. And now one of our guys, Seth McGowan, has some competition at Oklahoma. I really love this landing spot because Oklahoma year after year puts together a strong offensive line. Year after year, they build an offense that everyone thinks is built around the passing game, but it's actually very centered on the running game. So he's going to get a pretty solid workload. He's going to jump right into that Ramondre Stevenson like volume. I'm really excited about this because Eric Gray is my like savior of the 2022 class of running backs. And I mean, if he puts together a really strong year, I'm hyped.
Yeah, I love it. You actually, I had missed the news and you told me right before we hit record, and I was extremely excited to hear about that. And I think it really, yeah, it really is exciting for Devy players who have him, but also just like you said, this Oklahoma team, we saw them really struggle in the beginning of the year to get going and to really limit their turnovers because Spencer Rattler just had too much on his shoulders. But once they were able to get that running game going, their whole offense started to click. Spencer Rattler started to play a lot better. So as much as we joke around in the NFL that running backs don't matter, we've talked about this here before. I think it's a completely different story in college football where just their talent can really be a difference maker when going up against, you know, your average college linebacker that's never going to sniff the NFL. So, yeah, I think it's a big deal.
No, I'm super hyped about that one. But beyond that, I mean, we did go through the declaration period, and I think there were some, you and I both have some like personal rooting interest in some of these names as fans. But let's start off with the running backs that decided to come back because, I mean, I'm really excited about a couple of them. Zamir White. I think after this year, we can't be super shocked that Zamir White decided to return. Right. He's been one of those guys that's been, we know the talent. I got to look something up because I'm not positive Zamir White returned. I think Zamir White might be going into his third year. And now I feel dumb.
Now I'm going to look too here.
No, he was in the class of 2018. So 2019. Yeah, 2018, 2019, 2020. So he would have been eligible after this year. I forgot that he sat out his freshman year. Whatever. I'm old. I'm dumb. So, I mean, he had 779 yards. He averaged 5.4 yards per carry. He had, of the adjusted rushing attempts, he had 44% and 45% of the adjusted rushing yards. I mean, he had a pretty solid year. He's a good player. I think when you look at this year's class, he probably would have slotted. He if he had gone out and been a freak athletically, he probably could have slotted into the back end of that top five, which is a little bit questionable. But I think it's probably good for him to go back. And if that offense continues to be strong, like it was at the end of the year, I do think that he has a pretty solid opportunity to boost his draft stock. So, and I'm pretty sure Cook and McIntosh won't be back, but if they are back, I don't care. Zeus is still leading the pack, but
Cook was a junior last year, so I would anticipate him being there.
So they're still going to have a pretty crowded backfield, whatever. Yeah. The guy to buy out of Georgia's backfield, if you're me, is still Kendall Milton, but I do think that Zamir White could see his draft stock improve if he puts together a year where it's, I mean, let's in a year where he's not going to only play SEC teams, I think that gets boosted up a little bit. If we can project him to be somewhere in the like 900 yards range, I think we're looking at probably at least some increase in his value. Again, class of 2022 kind of is brutal at the moment. So I think there's some value there. So he's an interesting dude. But let's talk about your guy for a second. We both liked him this year and said he was kind of one of those quiet names that people on the East Coast didn't know. And that's CJ Verdell.
You kind of threw a curveball at me because you said my guy. Dude,
that is your guy.
I don't know. He plays at the University of Oregon, which I love.
He's your guy.
But I do not love CJ Verdell. I've always been kind of low on him. I don't even think he's the best running back on our team. I think if Dye can kind of control his fumbling problems, which to me, I am not one who believes that. I mean, there are some players who have problems with fumbles. But I think that it's something that is kind of fluky at times. And I think Dye will be the man next year. I think CJ Verdell will be playing behind him. Now, we do rotate
Sean Dollars.
Dollars is exciting, man. And we got this kid Seven McGee coming in. We're gonna have a fun running back room. But I think CJ Verdell, to your point, with these other talented running backs, I don't think he's gonna get the workload that he requires to become like a highly sought after.
Do you think there's a running back in the Oregon room that is worth anything Debbie wise?
I would be interested in, I mean, if you're in a super, super, super deep league, this kid, Seven McGee, he's an incoming freshman. He's a four star. He's kind of on the cusp of, you know, being highly rated enough to be someone that's interesting, but he's one of those smaller backs. He's kind of a satellite back. So it's going to be interesting to see what his role will be. I do like Dollars as well. I think he could be pretty exciting. I think they both have much more upside, but they're both so young. We haven't really seen them do anything yet. Dollars was stuck behind Verdell and Dye. He didn't really get much play until Verdell went down with an injury, but he popped a little bit in the Pac-12 championship game. He had a couple good carries, but he just didn't get very many opportunities. But I would lean towards Dollars. I don't think Dye has the top end speed to get the draft capital that we would want from a running back. But I do think he's more talented than CJ Verdell. If I'm a CJ Verdell owner, I'm trying to sell him right now.
Yeah, I don't know if you're getting much for him anymore, unfortunately.
Exactly. I don't care if I'm getting anything. If I'm getting anything, I'm doing it.
So I think you're probably right there. The one name that we do have on this list that probably has some real chance for upside is Brian Robinson. And maybe this probably isn't a name that everyone probably knows the name Brian Robinson. Particularly.
And they probably think he's the freshman running back at Texas.
That might That's be true, Keisha. But that one hurts. But Brian Robinson, he got a few looks in the national championship game, and he was averaging, I think, like 6 or 7 yards per carry. He's a strong running back, and I think getting out of Najee Harris's shadow is going to really help him. But he's going to need to put together something pretty spectacular this year, and I question whether or not they're going to have a ton of volume for him. They do still have Jace McClellan. As of right now, they have Trey Sanders. I don't want to insinuate too much, but he strikes me as a transfer portal candidate just because he is he really can't seem to find a place on this depth chart. And we're talking about a kid who was a top. He was the top overall running back in his class, and I believe he was a top 10 overall prospect, and he hasn't really found his footing there. So I do wonder a little bit, but Brian Robinson would be my early guess to lead Alabama in work. And I mean, we've seen it. Alabama can make running backs look really special because they're willing to give them the ball, even when they do have a really strong quarterback. And the one interesting dynamic that will be added with Bryce Young is Bryce Young's not a statue like Mac Jones. And that does tend to have a positive impact on the running game. So he's just a name to keep in mind. Again, none of these names, I would say from the running back group, none of these names are ones that you really should be buying, but they are all probably some names to monitor.
Right.
There are some really fun wide receivers though. And we're going to start with not the one that has my heart. We're going to talk about one from a team that I hate. And that's Justin Ross. I love Justin Ross. I bought Justin Ross in a Campus to Canton league as an incoming freshman. He obviously, as a freshman, I sat there and screamed that he needed to see the field more. He really has. I mean, he's looked special when he's been on the field. He's another one of those guys. He's 6'4". He's over 200 pounds. He's probably a little bit fat right now, realistically, because, well, he hasn't played football. But coming off of a very serious neck injury, question about whether or not he is really going to ever be able to play football again. But he did announce on the 16th of January that he would be returning to Clemson this for this next season. And I know people are probably instinctively thinking that Clemson's going to get a huge downgrade at quarterback next year because they're losing, obviously, a superstar in Trevor Lawrence. But, I mean, we saw DJ Uiagalelei in some stretches. He's definitely going to throw the ball around, and they're definitely still going to be a very dynamic offense. So if Justin Ross comes back healthy, I mean, there's a chance he, I mean, I don't know what his ceiling is. I don't think it's insane to think that if he looks healthy and doctors give him the go ahead, would it shock you if Justin Ross was the top wide receiver drafted next year?
Of course not. Of course not. It's all a matter of health and what his recovery looks like. I think that's spot on. I think he has the highest ceiling of absolutely anyone.
So that's a fun one. I want to talk about a transfer who.
Let me do it. Let me do it. I want to talk about a transfer too. I'm curious if it's the same guy. It probably is.
It is because we talked about him.
Okay. So Charleston Rambo, wide receiver from Oklahoma, 6'1", 175 pounds. He was their deep threat in 2019, where he hauled in 43 receptions for over 17 yards. He was used in the kick return game. This last year, it kind of took a step back because we had the emergence of my guy, Marvin Mims, who I can't stop talking about. So this last year in the 9 games, he only hauled in 25 catches, only 3 touchdowns, but he was still super involved in the kick return game, averaging over 25 yards. He returned some punts as well, but he's heading to the University of Miami, which I think is an interesting fit because I think Miami's big problem was they had Brevin Jordan, but other than that, they didn't have a whole lot to rely on in the passing game. So I think if De'Arik King can get healthy, this could be a lot of fun having Rambo in that offense.
Rambo was a guy that I actually was really high on in the offseason. I'm a guy that takes part in a lot of these Debbie drafts for Debbie Watch. I like to do the mock drafts. I like to constantly stay ahead of the value and knowing where people are taking them. And one of the big things that you noticed was that people were trying to project. And people were trying to say, this dude, yeah, he hasn't produced for anything yet, but we're going to take him. And so you saw guys like Theo Weiss going in like the 3rd or 4th round. And then Charleston Rambo was like a last round pick. And I started to think about it and I looked at it. And you're talking about in 2019, he accounted for 18% of the team's receiving yards. And he accounted for 14% of their receiving touchdowns. I just want to quickly pull it up because I don't want to state this wrong, but Theo Weiss, on the other hand, accounted for 15% and 13%. That was 2020. In 2019, Theo Weiss accounted for 7% and 13%. So, I mean, you looked at it and you were just like, why are we like, I get it. Theo Weiss is the super high prospect. We knew it. We know he's got this insane value, and maybe this huge upside, but we have never seen him do it. And you can essentially get the Oklahoma receiver that has actually produced and has actually been a meaningful part of the offense for rounds upon rounds upon rounds later. So that was really my whole argument. But then this year, I mean, Rambo really did take a step back. But I think that's also, you say it's because of Marvin Mims. I say it's because they distributed the ball. And Spencer Rattler, I mean, we're no receiver on Oklahoma had more than 37 receptions. So yes, Charleston Rambo had 25 receptions. So that's a pretty big knock. But that's 12 less than the leading guy. So it isn't like at Alabama where it's something silly, like 40 different. So I do think it's interesting. It's a unique, or a good landing spot if King is healthy at the beginning of the year, which I don't think is a guarantee. I do think he'll play for most of the year, but I don't think there, I think there's a chance he won't be fully healthy. Remember that JT Daniels tore his ACL at the very, in the first game of USC season in 2019. And we didn't see him until the last like 4 weeks of this season. So I understand everyone thinks that ACLs are nothing these days, but you never know. There is a pretty decent chance that you're not going to get a fully healthy D.R. King. And I mean, my boy Tathan just left there. I know they have some other talent in that room, but that QB room isn't exactly jammed with talent at the moment. There's guys, but it's not like overflowing with talent. So he's a guy to watch. I do think if he can produce there, we're talking about a dude that probably gets on an NFL roster regardless. If he can end up getting putting together a strong season with Miami as their lead guy, maybe he's a day two guy. And now let's talk about my heart.
I guess I was too soon. It was a preemptive title for last episodes when I said EYE Olave. I guess welcome back, or you never left, Chris Olave.
So there's an interesting conversation that's out there that's, well, so you know how most, when you are a prospect, the stars sort of have some type of value that maybe people don't understand. If you are a four star prospect or higher, you are seen as draftable. That means that as a high school prospect, they are projecting you to be a future NFL talent. If you are a three star, they are not projecting you that way. And if you are a five star, they are projecting you as a first round pick. That's sort of just like, it's generic, but it's an easy way to put this in framework to think about it. So Chris Olave was a three-star prospect. If you're a three-star prospect, do you typically assume that you're going to be a three and out? I think most would assume that if you're a three-star prospect, that you are prepping as if you are going to need all 4 years of school,
right?
Particularly if you're Chris Olave and you are coming into one, there was other top one. He was the lowest rated receiver in the class in the 2018 class that Ohio State brought in. He was in a room that appeared to be jam packed, and we're talking about a dude that almost broke out as a sophomore. Almost broke out as a sophomore. I think he saw that. Yes, he had a fantastic junior season. He had a 0.34 dominator rating, accounted for 37%. This is on per game, which isn't my favorite way to do this, but it's the one I have in front of me right now, and I don't feel like doing math. But he accounted for 37% of receiving yards in games he played. So, I mean, we're talking about a dude that was the centerpiece of the offense. And we thought at the beginning of the year that maybe Garrett Wilson would come in and take some of that. We thought that maybe some of these young guys were going to make an impact, but he proved that he was the alpha wide receiver on a strong offense. So I think he was in a situation where he sees that he is the top guy on this offense. And when is it silly to think that he saw Devonta Smith have a similar a blow up senior season and said, I can do that. I can earn high first round pick value by doing it. I don't necessarily agree. I actually don't like this for his Devy value. Cause I like younger wide receivers, but the one thing that we do need to take in consideration is he's not going to be 23. This was his age 20 and a half season. This isn't a guy who is, he's going to be drafted at the age of 22. So he'll be a little bit older, but he isn't going to be some Calvin Ridley who is just one of the oldest receivers in his class. So even though he's coming back for a fourth year, I still like his value. I do think he has an opportunity to be great. I do question if this is going to hold back Garrett Wilson a little bit. This makes me a little bit more concerned about putting Garrett Wilson as my wide receiver one, but I think both of them are buys. I think both of them become strong wide receivers in the NFL. And I actually think any wide receiver who gets another year to learn with Brian Hartline is probably doing a positive thing.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good take. I think it'll be interesting to see what it means for the other guys on Ohio State as well. I mean, Let's go ahead.
I think there's a decent chance that you're going to see one or two wide receivers transfer out of the program. I don't think it'll be, there's a lot of, I would think speculation assumes that there would be guys from the 2020 class, one of Smith and Jigba, Fleming, or G Scott with the, it would be G Scott if it was going to be that. I actually wouldn't be shocked if you see some like lower key names. Cameron Babb was in that class of 2018. He was a top 100 prospect. He got injured his first 2 years, and this year was kind of his, like, supposed to be his return. Couldn't really ever get on the field. I think there's a decent chance he leaves, which would make me sad because I really like him. And there are a few other lower names on the board who you could just see potentially exit. I don't think there's any, but I don't think this is going to dramatically impact anyone other than it might just limit the ability for a breakout for a guy like Smith and Jigba or Fleming or in the newcomer Emeka Egbuka. There's just a lot of, I mean, it's a lot of moving pieces, but I think we're coming to this point now where, yes, I am an analytics guy. I love dominator rating. I love market share. I love all these things, but I've told you, with Alabama, with Clemson, with Ohio State, with these, with USC, with these loaded rooms, I'm taking nuance into it. And I'm saying, absolutely, how good was the offense? Did the offense make a, like, show that they wanted to get him the ball when they could? And yeah. And then are they going to still receive decent draft capital? I think on all counts, I'm just taking a nuanced look. So yeah. I think we've talked about him enough this season, but whatever. Still staying on the Ohio State roster. There was Jeremy Ruckert is a guy that returned. I've talked about him a few times. He's not ever going to wow you with his stats. I think, let's look, he has 28 career receptions at Ohio State, but he has 9 touchdowns. That's a pretty fun one. I think he just wants a little bit more tape. I think he wants to see the field during the regular season more. He's not going to be super duper old. This was his age 20.4 season. I think he wants a little bit more tape out there because in this year's class, there's a pretty clear top three, and then it was up for debate. I don't think 2022 is going to be dramatically different. And I think he has a chance to be the top receiving tight end prospect or top receiving tight end option going into next season. So yeah, he's a guy I like. I think he's probably a dude I actually would buy if you can get him cheap, but I don't know that. I think people who have Jeremy Ruckert on the roster are probably not going to give him up for cheap because they're seeing the same thing we see. It's that every big game, he seems to show up with multiple touchdowns.
Well, that's what I was going to say. He finished the season so strong. That's what he does. Yeah, I mean, in the playoff and the national championship game, he was hauling in touchdowns, hauling in very impressive one-handed catches. I think he would be a tough guy to buy right now. But we have some other tight ends that are also sticking around. Cade Otton for Washington decided to come back, who I know you're not that impressed with, but that's okay. And then Charlie Kolar for Iowa State. He's someone that I know you played quite a bit in DFS this year, as did I on occasion. And so it was interesting when we were talking about like the top five each position, we were saying how tight end is, you know, kind of hits a cliff after three. And a lot of it's because this next tier of tight end, they all decided to come back for another year.
So Kolar is an interesting one. He's huge. He's 6'6", 250. He's a tight end, so his volume is never going to be massive. Unless you play for Iowa, you're not going to get targeted 50 times. Or I shouldn't say 50 times, because he has a 50 reception season with Iowa State. So over his career, he has 1,425 yards. He's averaging 13 yards per reception. The eye-popping number for him is he has 17 career touchdowns. He does have a touchdown rate a little above 10% of his receptions. For the last two seasons, and even as a freshman, he showed up. He had only 11 receptions on the year, and 3 of them were touchdowns. So this is a guy that has proven to be red zone value. I don't know what his ceiling is draft wise, but I do kind of like him as a basically free type of player if you're like desperate for it. But honestly, if you're in Debbie leagues, this is, unless it's super deep or people really value tight ends more, than they probably should. The realistic statement is that he's probably going to get to your, like, your draft as a rookie. So when he becomes a rookie, really just he's a name to watch. If you start to see a little bit of buzz that he's going to go late day two, he's just a guy to keep an eye on. As for Otten, let me look at his stats. Let me pull it up. In four games, he had 18 receptions for 258 yards and three touchdowns. I mean, there's no denying it's valuable. I just think Washington's offense sucks. I don't know.
And they have no desire to throw the ball. At least they didn't this year.
Yeah, I think they get a little bit better next year. They do have some talent. They are, I mean, this was Jimmy Lake's first year as a coach, and it's a super weird season. So I don't think there's any question that they probably did just leaned into their strength, which was their defense. But I mean, I don't think we're going to get any, unfortunately, because there's interesting talent on this Washington team. The most interesting dude on that team is Puka Nacua. And unfortunately for him, I just think that offense is going to suck. And so Washington is just, I'm not targeting anyone from there because I do just question, are they ever going to have enough offense that an NFL team is going to be able to just pick them comfortably? Because for as much as we love market share and we love dominator rating, there are a lot of NFL scouts that look at raw production. And yeah, I don't have a lot of it.
Yeah. Worried, no, so. I think he's one of those guys. He's a more impactful college player than he will be for like Devy type purposes. Like, cause he's a good teammate. He's a good blocker. I mean, like the fans love him, but I don't think it really translates to what we're looking for.
If you need an inexpensive guy in college DFS, he tends to not be super pricey and real.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
He might be their top target on that passing offense. So sure, if you need someone cheap, throw him in there and hope that he scores.
Right. Cool. Well, I think that's pretty good for now. We'll get into more of this stuff in the future, of course. I'd like to take a couple minutes here to take a quick break and then also hear about kind of your process into, you know, how you evaluate some of these players. How you look at player comps, stuff like that, your kind of philosophy around all of that. So let me take a quick break, and then when we get back, we'll jump into the meat of the program.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings. A four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
What's up, listeners? This is Curtis Patrick. I just wanted to stop by and say thank you for supporting RotoViz Radio. You are the absolute best audience in the business, and I know it. As a special thank you, I'm offering 10% off your next RotoViz subscription. Just use code 2020RVRadio at checkout. That's right, go to rotoviz.com, click subscribe, and enter code 2020RVRadio at checkout for 10% off. You can even extend your subscription. Oh, and one more thing. If you haven't ever done it, please rate and review the podcast you're listening to right now on Apple Podcasts. It's really easy. It only takes like 10, 15 seconds. Just do it. We'd love to hear your feedback. Now, back to the show.
Yeah, always love hearing from my dad, Curtis Patrick. Roto Viz is a great site. Everyone should be definitely getting their membership, their subscription reset for the upcoming year if it isn't already done, if it's coming up. But Roto Viz specifically for me is I love the tools that Roto Viz has put together. It does become critical to my process. Now, mind you, I'm only like first pass of most of my reviews of players. A lot of it comes from, I watch a lot of college football. I pay attention to a lot of this draft news to try and figure out what type of capital we're looking at. And so when I come out with my initial like top five, it's guys who I think are going to have high capital, guys who started to hit some of the thresholds I like, and realistically guys that I've had high in Devy, because if I thought they were valuable in Devy and I start hearing confirmation that they're going to have high draft capital, then I start to push them up my thing a little bit. But then when I start to nuance how I'm going to pick apart who's my wide receiver 4, who's my wide receiver 5, I start to use some of the really cool tools that we have over at RotoViz. Probably my favorite is the prospect box score scout. I can't say that fast. I will.
You can take your time, Matt.
I never take my time. You should know that. The box score scout is actually a really nice tool because it's already updated for the 2020 season. You can go in there, drop in a player, any player you want. So let's look up Dwayne Eskridge, who is the new hotness right now.
Yeah, he is.
So Dwayne Eskridge, we're talking about, so you jump in, you immediately see, ooh, he's a 5-year player at Western Michigan. His career market share of yards is 24%. Ooh, that's awfully pretty. When was his breakout season? His 5th year. Okay, less pretty. But if you're looking for positives for him, these are the things that should stand out. As we start to get official measurements, they do start to populate in here as well. Obviously, right now they're not populated. We don't have 3-cone. We don't have 40. We don't have all that. It does eventually start to populate in there and allows for some of the sims to be adjusted for athletic comps. However, realistically, this is a production based app. So it does really take into primary consideration production. So the big thing for him that you're looking at is it does tell you his career yardage over 17 yards. So he does have that field stretching ability, 15 career touchdowns. So has that scoring on kind of a pitiful offense. Then it gives you dominator rating. And then the one cool thing it does, and I want everyone to understand this, player comps should always be taken with a grain of salt. They are 99.999% of the time effectively useless. However, if you are looking for someone to try and think about when you're trying to just adjust value, player sims can be valuable. So the kind of interesting things you can do is it does allow you to input data on this to go beyond just having them on their production. So let's say Dwayne Eskridge right now, you know, where does CBS have him? You said they had him at 29.
The mock draft I looked at has Eskridge going to the Saints at pick 28 in the first round.
So 28. So let's say you want to go put him in. You say this one mock draft has him at pick 28 to the Saints. So let's see.
Which is crazy.
It is. By the way, for all those who love Dwayne Eskridge, I'm sorry, you're going to hate me, but he's garbage. So now looking at his player comps that pop up, here are the first 5. Ryan Broyles, Jordan Shipley, Zay Jones, Sterling Shepard, and Vincent Brown. So it's just a way for you to kind of adjust your belief on things. Now, here's what you kind of need to take into consideration. It does factor. What that immediately did is it like added, he's a 5-year player. These are his career yardage, and we don't have 40-yard data. Let's just say he runs. Let's even be fun. Let's give him a 4.440. See if it adjusts it at all. Mind you, my computer's slow, so I'm going to have to vamp for just a moment with a 4440, continuing to vamp. All right, box score scout, you are killing me. Number 1 jumps up to Zay Jones in that spot. So obviously I was a big fan of Zay Jones coming out of school. I am no longer a huge fan of Zay Jones as he has not been productive in the NFL, but still love him. But yeah, so that's kind of what you need, the way to use this tool. And I think it's a really effective one. One of the tools, a couple other tools that popped up over the last year was the Combine Explorer. And obviously we won't have a Combine this year. So I don't know if we're going to update this for Pro Day, because obviously Pro Day numbers are really, really questionable. And I think everyone should be aware that Pro Day numbers are rougher to use, but this is a nice tool. So I'm going to use a player. Give me a fun rookie from last season.
A fun rookie from last season?
From last season.
Give me Justin Jefferson.
Jefferson. Okay. Jefferson. Cool. Good thing I can't type. One thing you should know, I'm an idiot.
I will say about Eskridge real quick while you're looking that up.
He's an idiot. He's terrible.
He had a pretty good year. He was top 8 in almost every meaningful category in the MAC this year. He was number 3 in yards from scrimmage, number 2 in touchdowns from scrimmage, number 2 in total touchdowns, number 2 in kickoff return yards. So the dude did have a pretty good year. It's not like he's blowing up at the quote-unquote Senior Bowl, whatever that thing is, this year, and came out of nowhere. He definitely was productive, albeit for a Western Michigan Broncos team that I couldn't even tell you two other players on that team. So,
So using the Combine Explorer, because you effectively vamped for me, yes. His top comparable players athletic.
Justin Jefferson's,
what did I say?
No, I was just reminding
him. Justin Jefferson's top athletic comparables were Mark Bradley, Keenan Burton, Torrey Smith, Travis Taylor, and Paul Williams. You want to know what that tells me?
What? That they didn't do a great job.
Athletic comps are kind of rough. So anyone who's telling you that they care about athletic comparables are probably grifting you a little bit. Because athleticism really isn't the huge thing. However, this is a way to just kind of put this into consideration. Here was the issue with the player you picked. He didn't run a shuttle and he didn't run a 3-cone. So it does actually hurt him a little bit. And his bench press, he didn't do. So he's zero percentile in 3 stats.
Yeah,
so that kind of hurts him. I'm going to do, let's do Jonathan Taylor, because he was the next on my list. In his top 5 comps, there's a bunch of garbage. There's Mario Fannin, Robert Turbin, Chris Henry, Niall Davis. Now, Niall Davis sounds like a slight, but Niall Davis was a freak athlete. People kind of forget that. But the other big name in there is LaDainian Tomlinson. It does just kind of give you this idea, and it gives you all these, and it's not trying to tell you a Hall of Famer. So that's the one issue I always have with player comps, is player comps have this nasty habit of comparing you at their 99th percentile outcome. Don't ever really buy into that. That's the issue, is that if somebody tells you that Jamar Chase's best player comp is Jerry Rice, it's because they want you to know for a fact that they think that Jerry Rice is the greatest player, that Jamar Chase is their highest rated prospect ever. That's basically what they're telling you. Just don't buy into a lot of that stuff. Instead of using player comps, try and look at like thresholds, try and keep yourself up to date on draft capital, because unfortunately the reality of a lot of this stuff is draft capital is really one of the biggest indicators for eventual success, team landing spot has a huge part in it. So really, I'm not a huge player comp guy. They're sort of effective, and they're honestly, and this is kind of a self-promotion, or not self-promotion, but self-help here, is they're really good for writing, because they allow you guys to get some type of mechanism for understanding a player. But the other two tools are the two prospect labs, where you can do similar things, where we are kind of coming up with like outcomes, like potential outcomes for where players are going to end up. But like I said, my favorite tool is a box score scout, because it does kind of give you just the threshold numbers. And no, I'm going to be honest. I love Excel. I love throwing things into Excel. You know what I love more than all of that? Not doing math. And yes, that helps me not do math. So I think there's a lot of stuff out there, but like I said, for me, there's a few thresholds I like to look for, and then it's draft capital. And then, yeah, it's really a production thing for me. So I know I just hit a whole bunch of tools, and a lot of those kind of become tiebreakers for me. Because
yeah. It's good to have just additional information. Like it's good to know these things. It maybe shouldn't be like how you,
if it's your number one thing is right. The player comps, then you will miss out on players because
you're doing it backwards.
Yes. So what position do you want to start with? Because let's start with the gross ones.
Real quick, for all of you interested, as you know, you can get 10% off. You can get a 10% discount right now with the code RVRadio2021. So RVRadio2021 gets you 10% off your RotoViz sub. Okay, let's start with, let's go gross first. Let's start with tight end.
Okay, so my number one tight end, Hunter Long I'm kidding. It's Kyle Pitts. I really don't want to get into why I love Kyle Pitts. I think the answer is we saw that he's essentially a wide receiver playing that position.
6'6", 240. I mean, the dude's...
He's big. And let me just quickly pull up his numbers in front of me because I don't feel like...
While you're doing that, I think the most exciting and interesting thing about Kyle Pitts is the wager that you and I have on him. Will he or will he not go top 10? That's the big... the mock draft I'm looking at right now has him going pick number 8 overall to the Carolina Panthers. And if you look at the...
What did I say? Like 15?
Shit. You said, yeah. But then close. If you look at the PFF, PFF one I'm looking at too, mock draft also has him going number 8.
Ooh. To Mel Kiper, though. Mel Kiper has him 11, so deal with it.
Yeah. So either way, one of us is drinking beer. The winner, not the loser, of course. We'll probably both drink beer, but yeah, Kyle Pitts.
So interesting things about him. Number one, he's fairly young. He's 21. This year was absurd. And I think if anyone got eyes on him this year, they saw it. 770 receiving yards, 17.9 yards per reception, had 20% of the team receptions. And then 26% of yards, 38% of touchdowns, had a breakout season at 31% dominator rating, which, by the way, I don't typically use a 0.3 dominator as a breakout for a tight end because no one does that. He did it. He's essentially a wide receiver. I do think if there's going to be a Travis Kelce from this class, it is Kyle Pitts. My number two, because there isn't a ton to say about Kyle Pitts, I think we all...
Number two is here because it's
not Brevin, it's Pat Freiermuth. So Pat Freiermuth to me is, it's a good thing I have literally no idea how to spell his name. Pat Freiermuth is an interesting prospect. Obviously everyone knows, or maybe a lot of people don't know, he could have declared after last season he was draft eligible. He was a dude that people thought was going to opt out before this season. He's just kind of unique. This year was a down year for him. I know he missed time, and I know it was just a bad year overall, but this was kind of a step back year. But what it shouldn't be overlooked, the fact that he had a 26% dominator in 2018, 22% in 2019. And yeah, it was a 19 in this year, but really what was the difference was in his first 2 years, he had 8 touchdowns on 26 receptions in 2018, 7 touchdowns on 43 receptions in 2019, and then only 1 touchdown on 23 receptions. I will say that he had like an 80-yard run, an 80-yard reception that he got tackled at the 1-yard line, and that one sucked, and that took away one of his touchdowns. But for me, I think he's just safe, and I think that you're looking at a dude who, like, on his high end of outcomes, like probably 80 to 90th percentile outcomes, I think you're talking about a dude that becomes the next like Zach Ertz. I do think you probably see him. He'll have value in this mid pack where it's, I'm trying to think of like Jimmy Graham value this year, like that type of production. So you're going to get games where he's super valuable, but it'll probably be another one that becomes a little bit tight end dependent. Or not tight end, touchdown dependent, but that's most tight ends, and I'm pretty okay with that.
The thing I liked about him a lot was that he lined up in the slot more this year than he did in line. So he was out in a receiving position more often than he was on the line So I think that's exciting for fantasy purposes.
And then, okay, and then we'll talk about your guy because you love him and I have been lower on him than the world. Brevin Jordan out of Miami. 7 touchdowns this year, averaged 15.1 yards per reception, had over 500 yards passing. And we talked about that they really didn't have any good passing options. This was their guy that they went to. He had 44% of the team's receiving touchdowns, had a 0.35 dominator. I mean, it was a really strong year. My issue with him has been that I just don't think that offense really has been producing any talented receivers, and that's part of this. He has not been a dude that's looks like he's going to get definitely not round one capital. I don't think he's round two. I think he's probably round three capital because he's not really a blocker, and NFL teams do care about that. So draft capital is going to be a little bit, and I think there's a chance he just takes a little bit longer to develop into a consistently used one. That doesn't mean that he's not 3 years away from being Irv Smith, which is, I know that sounds insulting, but Irv Smith is going to be a pretty hot buy commodity this offseason. But I think he's good. By the way, the appropriate comp for Pat Freiermuth is Kyle Rudolph, and I just now thought of that, but that's who he's going to be. He's going to be Kyle Rudolph. So if you liked having Kyle Rudolph on your rosters for a lot of years because he was just all reliable, that's going to be Pat Freiermuth. So, sorry. Had to detour that. But Brevin Jordan is my next guy. And here is where the cliff comes.
Yeah.
Because after this, they all kind of suck.
Can I take a guess at your number 4?
Because I haven't told you it. I thought I told you.
You didn't tell
me. Okay. Who is my 4?
Wisconsin, Jake Ferguson.
No.
Oh, okay.
It's a dude you're not expecting. He's not.
Oh, wow. Hunter Long.
I do like Hunter Long. Hunter Long is on this list.
Talking about him,
it is not Hunter Long. I will tell you
because I don't even know any more tight ends.
Kenny Yeboah.
Okay, yeah. Ole Miss.
I don't love Kenny Yeboah. However, I think he did show in spurts this year that he was a very capable receiver and he had the explosiveness that you kind of look for. So he had 6 touchdowns, had 20% of yards in games he played, 26% of touchdowns. Averaged 19.4 yards per reception. I don't love him. He's a little bit older, but he's only 22 despite being in college for 5 years. But I think he's just he's a meaningful player. I think he does get some used. And I don't think he's going to be someone who you're ever going to feel great about. But if I were looking at the next group of players after the top 3 that I feel very good about, he is the one that strikes me as you could get 2 to 3 really usable years out of him. I don't know that they'll be in the next 2 years. He could be, who's that dude on Houston that everyone fell in love with? I can't think of his name. There's a tight end on Houston that everyone fell in love with before this year. And he's not very good.
Is that Aiken?
Jordan? No, it was it Aiken? I didn't think it was Aiken because he was younger.
I always forget, but yeah.
Whatever. It doesn't matter. He wasn't good this year. And everyone it was Cahill Warring.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, so everyone fell in love with Cahill Warring at the beginning of this year, and he had 7 receptions. No, I'm sorry. He had 3 receptions. He had 7 targets. He very well might be that type of player, but he also he could be Jordan Aiken, who got into the league at an advanced age at a UCF, and, I mean, had 37 receptions this year. So who knows? Like I said, I don't feel great about any of the tight ends after this, and I won't sit here and act like I spent a huge amount of time on this list.
So who's number 5?
I have a tie.
Ooh. So the grossest position, and you're going to give me an extra one.
I'm gonna give you 2. Number one of them is Hunter Long. 5 touchdown receptions this year. 685 yards, over 12 yards per reception, and it was his worst year in yards per reception for his career. He had 14.5, 9 touchdowns in his career, and 2 consecutive years with a dominator rating over 0.2. It's good. I don't know what, I don't have a ton to say about it. It's pretty good. It's not special, but it's pretty good. And he was, Boston College was a team this year that had some productive players. The other one is a dude that, by the way, that's partially because I think Hunter Long's going to have respectable draft capital. The other one, and I think he declared, I actually have to confirm this. I don't care enough to look at it right now. Oh, yeah, I do. It's because he's old. Matt Bushman out of BYU is my other guy. Two seasons in his career where he had over a .2 dominator, three consecutive years over 500 receiving yards, and nine career touchdowns. Again, none of these guys are special, but I do think that there's a way that I see Matt Bushman having like stretches where you find him and he's playable. This is all worth saying. If you are taking more than three tight ends in your rookie drafts, and it's not tight end premium, you're wasting roster spots. So
even if it is tight end premium, unless you're starting multiple tight ends, it's probably only. Yeah.
So I would say don't be looking at this year for a super duper tight end. That's why I said, let's start with the gross. Yeah. Let's now go with a position that is the least valuable of the bunch. And that is quarterback. Number one, I'm going to be controversial here. I'm going to be super controversial.
Well, hang on before you start. One of the things that I think is interesting is that outside of Jacksonville Jaguars' first pick, there's no real consensus on what order these other guys are going to go in. So just, and like with all these guys like Deshaun Watson and Matthew Stafford and all these vets that are looking at finding new teams right now, it's going to be interesting to see what positions open up for the quarterback. So yeah, I'm excited to hear your list because I think it's going to be really interesting to consensus which guys will end up playing on which teams and who will be starters and who will not. So now, please.
So number one, controversial. It's Trevor Lawrence. I'm sorry. I've talked about this a lot over the course of this year. Justin Fields is probably my preferred guy. If I'm in a rookie draft and I have him on the board and Trevor Lawrence and I'm taking a quarterback, I'm taking Justin Fields because I take players a lot of times. If I think players are close, I take the one I like. And I like Justin Fields more, but I would be dumb if I was telling you that Trevor Lawrence isn't a little bit safer. Career 67% completion percentage, passing adjusted yards per attempt. He had a career 9.77. This year he was a 10.2. 90 career touchdowns, 17 interceptions, and eight of those were in 2019. And if you go back to the early season of 2019, there was a stretch where it was real gross. And if you take that little stretch out where everyone kind of universally agrees he was a little bit bored, it's a lot better. So he's pretty absurd. I don't think you can go wrong. And honestly, I see him as a similar prospect to Andrew Luck in the fact that, yes, he is a phenomenal passer. He appears to have incredible arm talent, and he appears to be a very like insane mind at the quarterback position. But similar to Andrew Luck, I think he's going to add a lot of value with his legs that maybe you're not quite expecting.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you throw in his draft, I'm not even going to put his draft pick in there, but his top comps are Teddy Bridgewater, Deshaun Watson, Geno Smith, Tua, Patrick Mahomes. Like, they're pretty absurd. I don't think you can go. To me, he feels like a very safe prospect as long as the situation doesn't implode. And that's, I actually don't think Jacksonville is going to be a bad situation. I do think that Urban Meyer will be gone in 2 years, but even then they're not going to move off Trevor Lawrence. And I think that he's going to have guys like DJ Chark to throw to, and I don't think it's going to be a bad situation. Oh, and LaVisca. I know everyone loves LaVisca. I didn't fully love him this year. All right. Number two.
Number two.
Justin Fields. I'm sorry. I don't care. He had a 70% completion percentage this year, and people seem to think that he didn't complete passes and he wasn't accurate. Yes, he was.
I think technically it was 69.9% completion.
I'm sorry. I'm on our box score scout and I'm lazy and I'm not switching. He was so bad this year. His passing touchdown interception was 22-6.
Well, when you compare it to 2019, yeah, when it was
41-3. And by the way,
I'm insane.
Yeah. I mean, he's bonkers. The one concern, if you're looking for reasons to be concerned, here are the things. He does hold on to the ball a little bit too long because he is very confident in his ability to make something happen with his legs, and he wants plays to open up deep. I think if you go to the Clemson game, there was one drive where he was rolling around and he got sacked on a play. And that was like the end, and it was fourth down. They punted after that. And then the next drive, he basically did the same thing. And that's when Jameson Williams opened up for a 60-yard touchdown. It's he is so confident in his ability to keep a play alive that he sometimes takes a sack.
Like Russell Wilson, he might
like
say.
Russell Wilson. And honestly, like Patrick Mahomes, it's just, I think that with him, I think you're going to see I kind of hope he turns into Russell Wilson, because I think he's more talented than Russell Wilson. Sorry, Russell Wilson marks out there. I'm sorry. He is more talented than Russell Wilson. I think he has the most raw talent of anyone in that is coming into the NFL this year. He is insane. So I am a huge believer in him. I don't think you can go wrong with either him or Lawrence. Like I said, in personal drafts, I'm probably myself going to take Justin Fields because I like having him on my team. But I say this, I do have my Devy League I've been a part of for a few years, and I have both of them, so I'm pretty excited. So
I'm very curious where you're going with 3 through 5 here, because depending on who you talk to, it's all over the place.
It is, and I know that people think Zach Wilson is like clearly moving above him, and honestly, I've seen lots of reports saying the teams just objectively think he's better than Justin Fields. I disagree.
Both mock drafts I'm looking at, the CBS and the PFF, both have Zach Wilson going ahead of Justin Fields.
Yeah, they're wrong. I mean, he probably will. At this point, I do think he will, unless I do think the interesting situation is if the Jets trade for Deshaun Watson and they give up the number 2 pick, and then seeing what Houston does is an interesting one. The most interesting landing spot I have for Fields is actually, I do think Detroit would be a whole lot of fun.
That's where the CBS mock has him.
Yeah. But I think Detroit would be fun, and my dream scenario has been that Atlanta figures out a way to move on from Matt Ryan, and they take Justin Fields. That would be my preferred, because him throwing to Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley means that those Justin Fields shares that I have out there, they're super valuable. But number 3 on my list is not Zach Wilson. It is not Trey Lance. It's Matt Jones.
Hey, me too.
So I think there's two schools of thought on this. If you are a team that is close to already being a competitive team and you are a little bit old at quarterback, I think Mac Jones is the least likely to miss of the next bunch. And I say this just because I do like running value. I love the ability to run, and I think that there is a lot of upside in fantasy for running. But I also think that Mac Jones is going to have a high draft capital. I think a team is going to see him as someone they can just plug in to their offense, and he is going to be able to pass effectively. Now, he is probably capped at like quarterback 10 in any given season. But I think he is the safest to consistently be between quarterback 10 and quarterback 15 of this next bunch. I don't see fail rates with him as high as I do with the next two. I understand people are probably drawn to the little bit more attractive players. I mean, obviously Zach Wilson is a very attractive young man. But I understand why people prefer the more mobile quarterbacks to Mac Jones, but truthfully, he was incredibly productive this year. Film guys will tell you that they saw a lot of really, really good traits in him. And I do think that for me, he is just the safest of this bunch. And so if you're very close to being competitive, if you're a contender and you just need that second quarterback position in a super flex league to be locked up, he's a guy that I do like, because I would say is a player you're drafting if you're looking for like that Andy Dalton run.
Right.
Andy Dalton, where, yes, he's never going to be the dude that you love starting as your QB1, but you feel okay with him if he is your QB2, because you know you're not getting regular stinkers out of him. All right. Number 4, Zach Wilson. I get the love. I really do. He had a 12.48 adjusted yards per attempt this year, with 32 passing touchdowns and 3 interceptions. The team was a whole lot of fun this year. He rushed for 10 touchdowns. He's completed 73% of his passes. It looks like he's going to be the second quarterback drafted. That's all great. I'm really thrown off by his 6.88 adjusted yards per attempt and 9 interceptions to just 11 touchdowns in 2019. I love seeing improvement year over year, but that's a little bit scary. And that, by the way, I haven't mentioned fumbles much because I think I'm with you. Fumbles are a little bit fluky. But for all the love of Zach Wilson, his passing numbers aren't better than Mac Jones. And his rushing numbers, yes, they're better, but he rushed for 265 yards on 69 attempts this year. He didn't rush for 500 yards. His 10 touchdowns, yeah, there's 10 touchdowns there. Do you think he's rushing this much in the NFL if he was a 70 rush attempt guy in college?
No, I mean, and he's only, like, he's what, 6'3", 210 pounds right now? Like, he's not big.
I think that he is a very fun prospect, and I think there's a reason why NFL drafts or why NFL scouts are starting to fall in love with him. I just say that I don't think I'm totally happy writing off that 2019 season completely. And
I think he's the next Daniel Jones, honestly, where he'll have some splash plays, some exciting games where people think he could become the guy, but never becomes the guy. That's what I think about Zach Wilson.
That's fun. And I do like him. I don't want to make it seem like I don't like him. I think this class has quite a bit of talent. And my last guy on my list is actually not in the box score scout. It's Trey Lance. And I'm going to actually just quickly pull up his stats because, well, I don't have them in front of me. And unfortunately, it's not super easy to find stats for non-FBS players. But that's just the one game. Screw it. I don't care. I don't need stats for him. Just know that he was an incredible player in 2019. I think he rushed for, like,
if you'd like. He completed 67% of his passes for 2,786 yards. Yards per attempt were 9.7, 28 touchdowns to 0 interceptions.
Yeah, incredible player in 2019.
And he rushed for 1,100 yards.
That's the key. He is the one you're taking if you are looking for the next Lamar. And if you're looking for the next Lamar and you're not taking Justin Fields, then you're taking Trey Lance. Because that's what you're hoping for. Is you're hoping that he comes to the NFL and he rushes for 8 touchdowns per year and adds in 600 to 700 yards rushing. Maybe the comp that you're looking for him is like Josh Allen. Is his ceiling? I think Josh Allen is probably what your fingers crossed hoping he turns into. Maybe early years Cam Newton. I think he has a lot of upside. I think his career goes one of two ways. I think he either becomes a superstar, and like I said, Josh Allen is probably where I see his upside, or he gets his coach fired and really he kind of quickly falls out of the league. Yeah. I don't see a situation where Trey Lance becomes middle of the road and just kind of hangs around for a while, because I think he's very bipolar in his outcomes.
If you had to place a wager on which one it is, where are you landing? I'm guessing because you have 5, you would bet.
I lean fail, but I don't feel like I'm not super confident one way or the other. I think guys with that type of production can be successful. And I don't think he's bad. I choose to be a little as would assume by me having Mac Jones at 3. I am slightly more risk averse, which is why Trask is like not anywhere near this top 5 for me.
Yeah, we're running out of time here.
So let's do running back, which goes quickly because running back sucks. One is Najee Harris. We all watched him this year. We all saw him hurdle a dude that was standing up
and then run 50 more yards.
I think he's actually a better receiver than my number 2 on my list, who's obvious, but. I think he's a better receiver than him, and I think that's maybe an undervalued part of his game. I think he's the best all around back in this. I don't care about his age because let's be real. I don't care if he gets a second contract.
Realistically,
I'll probably try and sell him after 3 years in the league. Number two on my list is Travis Etienne. I think he's going to, at the pro day, he's probably going to run like a 4-1-1 because pro day numbers are fake. But I think his real time is probably like a low 4-4, maybe a 4-3-8 type range. He's really fast and he has breakaway speed. And I think that's valuable. We've seen it. There's a reason he has been the centerpiece of the, has been really at the center of a Clemson offense that had Trevor Lawrence. He's really, really good. And I think no one should overlook that. And this is when, and number three is where the debates really start to begin. I'm not a big believer in this dude that I have at number three, which is weird because I have him number three, but it's Javonte Williams. For me, it's really hard to argue with the fact that the dude had 19 touchdowns and averaged over 7.2 yards per carry. He was insane this year. On 157 rushing attempts, he had over 1,100 yards and 19 touchdowns. That's kind of bonkers. Running backs do not go over 10% on their touchdown ratio per attempt. Touchdown rate. It's bonkers.
We knew what you meant.
And then he had 25 receptions, so well over my two that I look for. So really, really good player. I hope he gets draft capital. I've actually seen people that prefer his teammate.
Michael Carter?
I don't care. Yeah, Michael Carter, I can say his name because he's not on my list. For me, I think he very well might be like a Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon is an amazing player. He's an amazing talent, but like every single running back, it all sort of depends on how good is your landing spot. I think he has all the talent to be amazing, and he could become a superstar. My only question is, he's not getting round one because there's only one running back in this class that has round one capital. And I think he might be back end of round two. And I'm not even positive that he's going to be one of the top three drafted. So he's actually a dude I think would have benefited from a combine. I think he's going to get pretty solid numbers at pro day, but I think he would have benefited from a combine because he appears to be very athletic. So whatever.
Right.
Number four on my list is not the consensus number four. It's because it's a dude I love and a dude that I've seen play football a whole lot, and I think he's great. It's Jermar Jefferson.
Ooh, okay.
Jermar Jefferson, if he played on the East Coast, people would love him. Heck, if he played for a winning team, I think more people would love him. But because he played for quite a bad team, he was kind of just one of those dudes that every once in a while you saw in highlights. But I guess I'll ask you, because you saw him or you watched his huge game this year.
Yep.
And I mean, is there any doubt when you saw him play that dude was kind of special?
No, he's so special. And I get sick of watching him like waltz into the end zone. Like the dude is a freak athlete. I think, like you said, if he's not playing for the Beavers, there's a lot more buzz around him. I think he's going to be a very solid player. My only concern, like for so many running backs, is landing spot.
Yeah. So as a freshman, he had 1,380 yards and 12 touchdowns rushing. On the ground, in the air, he had 25 receptions for 147 yards. So his usage in the passing game was, we'll throw it to you, but he isn't really converting a lot. So yeah, I don't think he's going to become like this elite pass catching back, but he at least showed that he's not a guy you have to take off the field. The reason why he fell off a lot of lists and why he didn't start to have that buzz again after 2019 was in 2019, he had a setback. He was a little bit dinged up all year. Only 142 rush attempts, 685 yards and 8 touchdowns, had 9 receptions, whatever. Again, I don't really care about that for him because I don't think of him that way. But then this is the crazy thing for me is he only played in 6 games in 2020 compared to the 9 from 2019. In 2020, in 6 games, he had 858 yards and 7 touchdowns. I think the dude looks like a complete running back. I think he's not going to be an elite receiver, but he's not a liability. And he just seems to have this rush explosiveness that I want to see for my running back. every running back is landing spot dependent. That's why every single one of these lists is sort of garbage until a player gets drafted. But on pre-draft value, I think he is a guy that a team is going to fall in love with when they watch his tape. And when you look at it, dive into his numbers, he looked like he improved after having that one down year. And I love to see it. So that is my four.
It's a great pick. And if you want to, like, if you're wanting to see some exciting tape on him, just watch the Oregon game from the fourth game of the Pac-12 this year, and you'll be wowed by him. He looked just tremendous.
And running back five, and this is one that's definitely going to shock some people because there are other good running backs. He did not play in 2020 because my running back five is Kenneth Gainwell. Okay. I think people forgot how freaking good he was when an offense was kind of set up to be like an effective running offense, but he exploited the crap out of it. And we kind of forget he was not the expected starter for Memphis at the beginning of the 2019 season. They had a running back by the name of Patrick Taylor, who was expected to be their lead guy. Patrick Taylor, who had rushed for, I'm going to quickly pull the, Patrick Taylor rushed for 1,100 yards and 16 touchdowns, was the expected leader of the offense coming into the 2019 season. He got dinged up in the first game, and he never got the ball back. Like, he was used, but he never got the lead role because Kenneth Gainwell had 231 rush attempts for 1,459 yards, so averaging 6.3 yards per carry, turned that into 13 touchdowns, and you're like, okay, so that's fine. Like, whatever. That's real solid. Cool. He also had 51 receptions for 610 yards and 3 touchdowns. Kenneth Gainwell was an absolute freak of a player in 2019. And I think people just kind of forgot. I hope that he took this time. Now everyone probably realizes, he sat out the 2020 season because there were a lot of people who like were questionable and why they decided to opt out. Oh, was it whatever? Is their draft stock not going to be able? Kenneth Gainwell had a lot of family members die of COVID. And for him, it was very like, it was personal. It really did affect him in a real life way. And he made the decision that it was in his best interest to just sit out and miss the season because he didn't feel like it was worth the risk. Not, you know what? I applaud anyone who made that decision because I know in his heart he probably, excuse me, wanted to play football this year. But I know people forgot him. And I know people just were sitting here looking at who played in the 2020 season, and that's where they're going to think. The dude was a monster. And if he added a little bit of weight, if he's close to that 200-pound mark when he gets drafted, Kenneth Gainwell is going to be a freak in the NFL. And I hope that NFL teams go back and look at that 2019 season closely because the dude was awesome. And yeah, I mean, I don't have a ton to say about him. I think he's just an underrated dude that in a vacuum, no landing spot, really only kind of thinking about draft capital, because I think he's probably going to get, I think he's going to land in a similar place that like Kareem Hunt did. So kind of back end around three. I think that's where he's going to be. And I think that's good enough as long as it's a decent landing spot. So I'm cool with that. Wide receiver actually is tricky though.
I think it's interesting that, we don't have to talk about it, but, notable major drop for you is Chuba Hubbard. Cause he was going into the year.
It sucks for him that number one, he was dinged up quite a bit of the year. He really should not, honestly, he should have opted out when all the shit happened over the summer. I think people kind of forget he hated his coach. He was very close to just walking away from the team, and he should have. Unfortunately, his team was really set up for failure this year because they needed to lean on him early while their quarterback progressed. Their quarterback got injured in game one, and they were like, oh, well, we're just going to go all in on Chuba. And the run, I mean, they had one of the worst offensive lines in the Power Five. And statistically, through like their first 3 or 4 weeks, I think they were the worst offensive line. So I felt for him. And then as the year wore on, it became pretty clear that he had checked out on the year. And I think it was Desmond Jackson really started to jump in and fill in for him, and he was effective. So they didn't lean on Chuba Hubbard as hard.
it's just a bummer. I really wish he would have come out last year because I think his value would have been a lot higher. But yeah. Right now, I think he's a dude that, I mean, if you can't argue with his talent. I think everyone saw that he was an incredibly talented player, and I hope that an NFL team takes him high, and I hope I'm wrong. I really hope he's one of the five best ones in this class, but I mean, 4.7 yards per carry, and I mean, a huge drop off from the previous season is just, it's hard to ignore, and it's a bummer. I love Chuba Hubbard. Again, I'm going to tell the story every time. I fall in love with him watching a spring game where he had two touchdowns. He is an incredibly fun player to watch, and I hope that I'm wrong. But let's get to the position that like is actually difficult, because while running back is difficult because it feels like a 2 or 3 person class depending on who you ask. Wide receiver is like a 30 person class,
right? There's so many good ones.
And so one is, I think there's debate around this, but my number one is Ja'Marr Chase, and it's just because for as good. So everyone has been watching this year. They've watched Justin Jefferson turn into a superstar. You want to know who is the alpha in that Louisiana State offense? It was Ja'Marr Chase, who had 1,780 yards, averaging over 21 yards per reception, had 20 touchdowns, and had a Dominator rating of 0.33 at the age of 19.8. So he's only 20, or he'll probably be 21 when he gets drafted. So he's not old. And he has an absurd season on his resume. I kind of love it. And I mean, the people will, the film guys, because I'm not a film guy, will tell you that he was pretty much a freak. And he was a 5-star prospect coming out of high school and was really special. So I'm keeping Ja'Marr Chase. I'm not knocking him because he sat out the year. I hope he looks the same physically that he did during this run. Excuse me.
You're getting all choked up over there.
No, I'm coughing and I've got water that is a sparkling water that is causing me to burp. So it's just not a great combination right now. So whatever. Number two is Devonta Smith. So my guy, who I'm going to go on Travis's podcast and debate, Ray GQ. I learned what it actually was because last time I called him Ray CQGR, whatever. I made it up. But Ray GQ was arguing with himself because he was turning it into BMI Twitter hated him. Fun fact, BMI Twitter is like 22 people out of the like 3 million people on Twitter. Yes, is his BMI low? Yes. Is he going to get high draft capital? Yeah. So I don't give a shit about BMI. so the thing I told you about Combine Explorer, the reason why I think it's more of a writing mechanism than it is for actual analysis is because athleticism only matters if it affects draft capital. Where is Devonta Smith going to get drafted, in your opinion? Just range.
Top 10?
Yeah. Do you give a shit if he's a little bit small then?
Nope.
So the dude had a 0.47 Dominator rating this year. He had 55% of his team touchdowns. He had 23 touchdowns this year. Yeah, I'm going to, and everyone, I know it's fun because I've always said you have to look at Alabama with nuance. You have to, well, and this year was a little bit weird because Waddle went out, but here's the thing. When there were 4 wide receivers on that team, so there's going to end up being 4 wide receivers on this Alabama team from 2019 that get drafted in the first round because Judy and Ruggs did it last year and Waddle and Smith are going to do it this year. What do you think his Dominator rating was in 2019?
I have no idea.
It was a 0.28. So he was very close to a breakout season when he was playing with 3 other first round picks.
Right.
Yeah, I get it. BMI Twitter might be a thing. I get it. I'm sorry. Stop arguing. If you're against Devonta Smith, then you're doing it wrong. He's not that old. He's 20. He's only 22 this year. So he's not young, but he's not old. But the dude just put up one of the best wide receiver seasons in recent memory. And I mean, that's it. That's all you have to say. It's absurd. I'm putting Chase above him because I think Chase had an equally good year the year before, and he's a little bit younger.
and I think they're going to have pretty equal capital, but that's personal preference. Right. And I think you can make a case for either one. Number three is Jaylen Waddle. I talked about him a ton this year. I wish he would have had not gotten hurt. And I also wish he wouldn't have played the national championship because it was less fun to watch. But for his career, the dude averaged 18.8 yards per reception. He had 106 receptions for his career, so not a ton over 3 years. But he turned that into 17 receiving touchdowns, so that's pretty stupid. And the thing that I always mention with him is that you're talking about that he's the one that I say grade with nuance because, yes, his production profile looks kind of crappy. It's kind of like Henry Ruggs last year, except for the fact that the one thing we saw is that they were so adamant about getting the ball in his hands that they put the kid out there on punts.
Right.
And he made people look silly.
Yep.
Yeah, made people look silly on punts. So love Jaylen Waddle. I think his numbers at the pro day, again, I think pro day numbers are stupid, but he's going to put up something ridiculous. So whatever. I know I'm being a little dismissive of a lot of this, but the truth is I think that Jaylen Waddle to me he's a high risk prospect because his profile kind of sucks from a production angle, but he's also just looks like a monster.
Yeah, I agree with that. I like Waddle a lot.
Number four is a guy that you should love him. If you don't love him, you're doing something wrong in your process. Because this player had a breakout during his freshman season, and then he got hurt in his sophomore season, and then he got a little bit dinged up during this season, and everyone seems to think that he sucks. And that guy's name is Rondale Moore. I'm going to read off his numbers as a freshman. Remember, he was a freshman at Purdue on a team that Purdue was not this like high-powered offense. He had 114 receptions, 1,258 receiving yards, and 12 touchdowns. That was a 0.37 dominator at the age of 18 years old. Yeah, that's stupid. Players don't do that. I am not a guy that tells you that breakout age is the end all be all. I'm not the guy that will tell you that age is the only thing that matters. But when there is a freak number in breakout age, you look at it. And if you sit here and go, oh, well, he's not that big. He might not be that like able to handle all this because look, he's been hurt. I'll go back to when he was a freshman and he squatted 600 pounds. The dude is definitely highly athletic and is definitely going to be able to handle the NFL. I think he is probably going to fall to round two just because I now think that there's some teams that are questioning him. But I don't care. And honestly, I say like I said, breakout age to me is not the end all be all. But when there's a glaring one out there from a guy who did it as a freshman and did it at the age of 18, you don't just let it go unnoticed. So that's why Rondale Moore will not fall out of my top five, even though I would have a little bit of tough time drafting him inside of the top six overall picks. Just because I'm a little more risk averse.
Right.
And then the last guy on my list is Rashad Bateman. Minnesota was disappointing this year, but I don't think it was Bateman's fault. I think Tanner Morgan took a pretty big step back. I think their offensive line was regularly having issues, and I think he just wasn't – it just was a bad year for them. But, again – breakout age is not end all be all. But I love seeing early usage. And can you just remind me, who was the guy that was playing with him at Minnesota in 2018 and 2019, his first 2 years?
Rashad Bateman. Not right now.
It's Tyler Johnson. Tyler Johnson was one of the biggest volume hogs in of college football.
We just saw rocking it for the Bucks last week.
Yeah. Tyler Johnson is. Oh man, he fell way late in the draft. He was a seventh round pick. Was he seventh? Might have been sixth, but he was a day three pick after we all had hyped him up. And the reason we hyped him up is because he's already making an impact on a pretty loaded Bucks team.
Right.
You want to know who took a lot of volume off him? Rashad Bateman. So as a freshman, again, playing with one of the biggest volume hogs in all of college football, he accounted for 26% of their receiving yards and 30% of their touchdowns. So that was 704 receiving yards and 6 touchdowns at the age of 19 years old. Not good enough for a breakout season. Fine, whatever. But good enough that you sit there and go, huh, who's this Bateman guy that is taking work away from one of the best receivers in college football? Maybe I should note him. Then, 2019, when he's still alongside Tyler Johnson, by the way, 60 receptions for 1,219 yards and 11 touchdowns. This is a breakout season. It was a .36 dominator. By the way, he also averaged over 20 yards per reception during that stretch. It's just noticeable. It's just really, really good. And then this year, it was a down year. But I just want to point out, in 5 games that he played, he accounted for 50% of the team receiving touchdowns, 46% of the receiving yards. So 472 yards and 2 touchdowns. Yes, that is definitely a big, oh, wow, Minnesota's passing offense fell apart, and they were still getting him the ball at all costs. So Rashad Bateman was really good. I do worry a little bit about his draft capital, but I also think he's still absurd. So yeah, he is my 5.
I actually have the same 5. I just have them in a different order. I have more ahead of Waddle, but that's
fair.
You know, and that's a lot of it. It's just, you know, I can't get those images of Waddle limping to the sideline in the national championship.
Honestly, I think the thing they said that he is healthy, but he has to I think your ankle feels weird coming back from that. Like, yeah, I can just say that. Like, much different scenario. Like, I broke the crap out of my arm when I was right out of college. I broke my arm, and for about a year, every time I would throw, because I boxed at that point, every time I threw punches with my right arm, it felt really weird, but it was healthy, and I wasn't doing damage to it, but it felt weird.
Right.
I equate it to that, in that once you start to get used to it again, it's fine.
Yeah, I hear you. A couple other guys that I was curious if they would make your list were Amon-Ra St. Brown, Terrace Marshall, Tylan Wallace, Elijah Moore, to name a few. I thought one of those four might, because those are guys we've talked about.
All of them.
Yeah,
I do. Amon-Ra St. Brown. I needed him to have this dominant season for him to really take that step forward. I think he's good. I don't think this is the second incarnation of Equanimeous St. Brown that we all fell in love with in college, and then all of a sudden he was a 7th round pick. I don't think that's what we're going to see here. I think he's a day 2 pick, late day 2 maybe. Terrace Marshall's really good. He's probably 6. I really like him, but I want to point out is if you go and look at a season, he had that one huge game where everyone kind of fell in love with him again.
Right.
And then after that, it was pretty stinky again. So, I just don't know that he did what you needed to see in this final year when he was the guy to be really elevated. Tylan Wallace is a freak. Tylan Wallace is super awesome. Actually, I take that back. Terrace Marshall is not my 6. Tylan Wallace is my 6. He made that offense go. Right? We've talked about Oklahoma State's offense had a lot of issues. Tylan Wallace was the only thing that looked good for a lot of that year. And so he's really good. I think he's talented. If you continue to watch reports from like all these different things, they're hyping up Tylan Wallace. It's because he's special. And then Elijah Moore. I love Elijah Moore. I really do. I don't think anyone can deny the fact that he is good enough to be on an NFL roster. I just don't know with him, because he was such a volume hog guy. And while that is a good thing and it translates to him having success in the NFL, he's also 5'9" and like 160 pounds. And I do just question a little bit if his capital is going to match what we all kind of see in him. I think he was the market share leader in 2019. I didn't look where he was in 2020, but you can't argue with the production. It's just a question of his capital. And because I think his capital is the least secure of the bunch, I'd be a little bit worried taking him in the top 5 receivers when I do think that the talent is there for some of the guys that I have above him. So,
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good receiver class. I think if you are a wide receiver needy team, this is probably an okay year if you're at like pick three to see if you can trade back a couple spots, because I don't think it's going to hurt you. I think there's probably like, yes, Ja'Marr Chase is awesome and I would love to have him on a lot of rosters, but if I was able to get a veteran or a pick plus Tylan Wallace, I'm not super, super bummed. So look for deals if you're at the, if you're a team that needs the help. But yeah, I think this is, if you're looking for wide receivers, this is a pretty solid class to do it in.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's going to be a very deep class. And I think we'll see a lot of, I think we'll see a lot of surprises too, just in the order that they get. I mean, we always do, but even in the order they get drafted in the NFL.
You didn't ask about Kadarius Toney.
I was putting guys on the list that I know you liked, not guys that I
like. I like Kadarius. I will say I like Kadarius Toney, but I think anyone who is just sitting here ignoring the fact that it was 5% dominator, 7% dominator, 7% dominator, 22% dominator, right. Just you can miss me with the fact, miss me with the fact that you think he's better than Rondale Moore. Sorry, he isn't.
Right. No, I agree with you. I do. I mean, I liked him from the get go, but I also know there's a lot, like you said, a lot of really great receivers. We'll be back with you guys in 2 weeks. We'll go through kind of the same type of outline here, except we'll be looking at Devy. We'll look at our top five at the Devy position, top five at each position for Devy purposes. Unless we feel like most of the coaching stuff has kind of been settled, then we might do that first. But look for those coming up pretty soon here. Thanks again for listening. We're not going anywhere. I'm excited for this offseason. It's going to be a lot of fun. Excited for the Super Bowl. I lost a bunch of money last week on the Packers and Bills. That's okay. We will, you know, I'll keep on going. Matt, anything you want to leave our good listeners with?
Bye, Chris Olave.
There it is. We'll talk to you all later.
Every year, compliance regulations change thousands of times, and every year, ADP makes thousands of seamless platform updates so businesses can focus on everything else, like running their business. Grow stronger with ADP, HR, talent, time, and payroll.